Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending where you're joining from today. Ladies and gentlemen, you're very welcome to the first Multilingual Sprint Series webinar. My name is Alex Chernenko. I am the CEO and founder of Translate Complete Language Solutions based in Ireland. I'm honored and excited to be hosting and moderating this panel today. We will talk about the future of live events, conferences, and live interpretation. This topic interests me a lot as I've been working in the language industry for the past two decades. Live events and interpretation got a huge blow in 2020 because of lockdowns and travel restrictions, but at the same time, it accelerated the technology development and shift to remote. Well, before we dive into discussion, let's do a quick housekeeping. First of all, a recording will be provided. However, you're encouraged to join live. Stay with us until the very end and ask questions. We've allocated half an hour for questions from the audience. Now I would like to introduce our distinguished panelists. We have selected quite a good mix to keep it interesting, engagement, and entertaining. First of all, Alex Gusev, who is a former CEO of RSI technology startup. He's an expert in remote simultaneous interpretation and has served over 500 offline, online, and hybrid events. We're delighted to have him now on Translate team. Alex, could you please say a few words about yourself?
Hello. Thanks for introducing. I'm delighted to be here today. Well, what can I say? I was working for a remote simultaneous interpretation provider previously. So I was at the beginning of the industry, really, like one of the first wave providers. And now I'm happy to be a part of a Translate team, and I'm continuing this wonderful journey. And I believe we have a great future with remote technologies. Thanks a million.
Well, our second panelist is Natalia Fedorenkova, who is a conference interpreter and remote simultaneous interpreter. Natalia is also a blogger, a language industry researcher, and an active member of interpreting community. Natalia, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, thank you, Alex. Like I said, I'm a conference interpreter with Russian and English based in Moscow. And I'm also doing remote simultaneous interpreting since early 2019. So when all this thing pandemic started, I was in a lucky position since I already had certain knowledge and skills to provide interpreting to my clients. So thank you for having me.
And last but not the least, Arsen Lazursky, who works as a translation lead at BCG. Well, he will be sharing comments from a buyer and client perspective today. Arsen, please introduce yourself.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm Arsen Lazursky, and as duly noted, I'm leading a translation team at BCG, one of the big three consulting companies. Been with BCG for 15 years, been on the customer side of things for the same number of 15 years. So I know both the translation side and the customer side of the business. And indeed, I will be sharing some views and experiences on how COVID and everything related to it changed the perception and the perspective of our internal customers on how they use interpretation services these days, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Thank you. Well, with introductions over, we will proceed to our discussion on the subject. In 2020, we saw a huge change in the way live events and conferences take place due to combination of COVID-19 pandemic and new technologies. These developments provided industry with an opportunity for fresh and new approach while looking daunting for others and possibly posing a risk to traditional interpreting. Well, interpreters were actually hit the hardest. A recent survey by ESIT have just been published 2 weeks ago and has been organized with the help of European Commission Knowledge Center of Interpreting. The survey was aimed at gathering information about how conference interpreters work in remote simultaneous setting. And, you know, here are some of the few numbers. I'll quickly share my screen to have. Okay. So from interpreters' point of view, quite an interesting data came out that actually not many interpreters were fond of working from home. Actually, just 25% of the interpreters said that they would prefer to work from home or remotely. 83% considered that working with remote simultaneous interpretation technology is actually more difficult than on-site. Only 68% of interpreters have worked fewer days, and 46% have actually fewer clients. So that is just 2 weeks ago data, and it shows that interpreters pretty much lost nearly half of their jobs. Well, let's pass the word to Natalia, who is our conference interpreter. And I know, Natalia, you actually conducted a similar survey a few months ago. So maybe you could share some of the insights and findings that you discovered from interpreter's perspective.
Yes, thank you, Alex. That's true. Some time ago, about 5 weeks, I think, we launched the survey on COVID-19 impact on the interpretation industry together with a well-known industry researcher, Konstantin Dranch and Naomi Bowman. And yeah, I'll now share my screen and I will show you the results that we got so far. So can you see my screen?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So as you can see, we got 540 respondents so far. And mostly these are freelancers working in international organizations, NGOs for the government and public sector, corporate events and commercial conferences. And there was a question whether in 2020, compared to 2019, the volume of work as a small Chinese interpreter increased or decreased. So for the majority of interpreters, like you said, Alex, according to the study that you showed, for the majority of interpreters, unfortunately, the workload decreased about 65%. But there was a thin layer of lucky ones who managed to get the hang of RSI, I think, and managed actually to increase their workload, but not so many of them. Then we were asking what was the share of online assignments in 2019, in the first half of 2020, and in the second half of 2020. So unsurprisingly, in 2019, it was mostly on-site interpreting for the majority of the respondents. Then in the first half of 2020, it was about 50-50, remote and on-site interpreting. And in the second half, it was mostly remote, which could be expected, of course. Then there was a question about the price range. And you can see those vary greatly. So there are interpreters working for 20 to 400 USD, from 400 to 600, 600 to 800, 800 to 1000. And I will post the link to the survey. It's an open data survey, so you can study it in detail later if you're interested. Then there were questions about hourly rates. So we found out that the majority of interpreters now accept hourly rates, so they differ. But the thing is that now is different probably from before. So most interpreters shifted to this hourly rate paradigm. But still about 30% of interpreters maintain the minimum order of a half day, which is good news for me since now I am lobbying for the interpreting community. Then there was a question about the changes in the rates on the market and the rates of interpreters. So mostly we see that rates on the market either decreased. 44% of interpreters answered that they decreased. Then 45% said that the rates stayed the same. And as for the rates of individual interpreters, so you can see 60% said that they maintained their rates, which is also good news. But for 20%, unfortunately, the rates went down. There was also a question about whether the interpreters managed to find new clients in 2020-2021 due to, you know, collapsing of geographical borders that we like talk about so much. And actually, yes, I found out that 50% of interpreters said that they actually managed to find new clients, but that was not so easy as it may seem. Then there was a question about diversification, whether interpreters needed to diversify. But the majority said that they did not take up any other activities, and interpretation remained their main source of income, which is also a good sign, I think. Then there were questions about the RSI technologies. So we listed different RSI providers, and the interpreters were rating them. I think you can study it later in detail. This is a long list of RSI providers. And then this question about Zoom. So what percentage of your work is on Zoom? And also, as expected, 52% of interpreters said that from 76 to 100% of their work is on Zoom. So we can discuss that later also. And then the interpreters were mentioning what can be improved with RSI tools. So you can see the words that are written in larger letters. They were mentioned more frequently. And then I think this is the most interesting question for our discussion today. When lockdowns end, where do you believe you will work from predominantly? And, you know, to my surprise, actually, about, I think, 45% said that they expect to be working from home remotely or from hubs powered by RSI. And 34% said that they want to go back to booths, which is probably only natural that they want to return to their familiar environment. But still, 45% are expecting to continue to work remotely. So we can also discuss that. And then there was a question about the countries where the interpreters were based. So you can see that the study is truly global.
And, thank you, Natalia.
Yeah. Okay, then
I think you may share the link with the audience in the comment section.
Yeah.
Now I would like to pass the word to Arsene. We heard a story from interpreter perspective, and your survey in combination with ESIT survey showed that the interpreters' work decline rate slightly decreased, but that may mean that on the client side or buyer side, there is more choices to interpreters and there are better rates. So Arsene, could you share it from a buyer perspective? How did pandemic affect buying language services? And we could also touch on translation. I know the main topic is about events, conferences, and interpretation, but you could also touch base on the translation. How, from buying perspective, has the situation increased, decreased? Are there any pros and cons for the buyers of language services?
I can only obviously speak about the company I'm working for. So in translations, we did not see any change pretty much. We had the workload for both our own department and our outsource providers was pretty much flat before COVID and during the pandemic. And I expect it will be... It is gradually rising, but it's just because the company is growing and the business is growing. So that's natural. So there was no major hits and no major hikes. Interpretation-wise, that was interesting, though, because at first we did not have... when COVID hit, we went to full remote mode, I think, in March. And for March, April, May, and probably June, we did not have any interpretation requests because nobody knew how to do it. Everything was cancelled. Interpreters that I know personally and who we maintain contact with were pretty much thinking they were considering what they should do now because they were out of job and they were considering ways to put bread on the table, you know. But then once everybody figured out RSI and once we figured out RSI and how you could use it, We saw a huge spike in the number of interpretation requests, and I attribute that largely to the fact that with online, lead times became shorter, so you can actually request an interpreter like within the next hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, which was impossible when everybody was offline, when you cannot get an interpreter to a meeting in 2 hours. And both because the interpreters are busy and because you need to get, you know, all the logistics for the local clients, like you need to get them passes to the building, you know, all that kind of thing. With online, it was a lot easier. Plus, it became easier to sort of bring in international experts to meetings with our clients, with BCG clients. And because you don't need a visa to go online, right? You don't need air tickets to go online. You don't need to book a hotel to go online. So you just plug in and you get support from a senior BCG advisor pretty much on demand. So, and that's when you need an interpreter. So both those factors, I think, contributed to the fact that now we have a lot more work for interpreters. We actually increased the pool of interpreters we work with during COVID, and it's been stable for several months now, but I don't know, probably we will be increasing the pool soon again. That's, well, remains to be seen. So if we talk about rates and renegotiating them, we I know on our side what we did do was we agreed with a number of interpreters, we agreed to reduce you know, the minimum size order. You know, so initially everybody was going like pushing for 4 hours. So we agreed to 2 hours with some of the interpreters we work with, because, well, and that was natural because there were a lot of, you know, follow-on jobs. There were a lot of regular meetings, so they did not need all that time to prepare for those meetings, like when you go to a client first time. So that was something we agreed upon. And I think that trend will continue. I think, well, most interpreters will nowadays have like at least two sets of rates. One set will be for online, the other one will be for offline events. So that's and another thing that I noticed, I'm not sure whether that was the fact before or it only happened during COVID, but I think that the interpretation community, at least here in Russia and in Moscow, is getting a lot more consolidated. Because as everyone is going on back-to-back meetings, there's an issue of handover, there's an issue with cancelled meeting, there's an issue with urgent meetings that pop up from out of nowhere. So if you talk to other interpreters in the market, if you cannot handle your client right now, you can always ask a friend, you know. So that kind of consolidation, I think, is a good thing for the industry because it brings everyone together. And I think that's just a positive, one of the few positives that we can take out from this pandemic experience.
Well, it's thank you for sharing. It's always good to see the positive side of things. So on the one side, the clients got access to more interpreters online. The interpreters would have to renegotiate their rates to be more competitive and stay in business. Well, now, for some of the listeners who maybe never heard the term RSI, I would like to switch the microphone to Alex Gusev, who's been developing RSI for the last number, is it 3 or 5 years? Just to give a little bit of, you know, introduction for those listeners who may not heard about it yet, maybe from a client point of view. So, Alex, if you could just share what RSI is and then share how it kind of changed and jumped in 2020, because up in 2020, some businesses, some conferences haven't even heard about RSI. So if you could start with explanation, what it is, and then how kind of the technology and the client education and awareness of RSI evolved since the last year.
Sure. Thanks for that. Well, first of all, I'd have to say that I doubt that here at Multilingual Spring, we do have people in 2021 who don't know what RSI is, right? I believe it's quite the opposite. But yeah, but I'm just kidding, right? So to be serious, well, look, it's kind of a mixed, very controversial dynamic. So on the one hand, of course, the past year, this year is like a gold rush time for RSI providers, for all of us, and the market share of RSI, I believe, have grown dramatically. But on the other side, we see a shift in the demand in the way how people use remote simultaneous interpretation and what actually needs to be translated, because previously, before COVID times, like the biggest deal for all RSI providers was like a big on-site event, like a stadium type of event, right, with thousands of people, something like this, or maybe dozens of smaller sessions, smaller rooms, and that was where guys like the big RSI players took their market. Now we don't have that, but people test with different event formats, with hybrid events where like personal on-site participation is limited, and things have shifted towards how they call it, chat roulette, right? Quick dating, quick meetings, mingling, or live streaming, or a countless number of breakout sessions. So the communication itself has intensified. I believe everybody feels that during 2020 and 2021, we've started actually working more. I see people's calendars, so the people don't even leave 5 minutes before and after the meeting. It's like crazy. You sit next to the laptop the whole day, and you actually communicate more. You go to more events. So I think that has intensified, and that's where you need more demand for interpretation services. That was just like really quickly, but the positive thinking, the triumph of RSI has very quickly stopped when Zoom introduced its remote interpretation solution feature, and I think it was like 2 or 3 months before Spring when it happened, and look what's happening now. I believe 90% of all the assignments that require interpretation are done with the help of Zoom and or professional streaming things like OBS and vMix, and all professional, big providers, RSI providers, that they are now targeting big hybrid events or those events that don't have a lot of breakouts, and Zoom is not capable of providing interpretation in the breakouts. But no, I know for sure that the number of RSI providers and the number of setups that can be used for RSI has increased dramatically. So everybody has their own RSI solution all the way to cover their simultaneous interpretation needs. So the real question now is not the solution that you have, but the team that is responsible for your, that's why the profession of a consultant interpreter has arisen quickly, right? So it's all about team management now. Yeah.
Well, you touched on a good point. The concept of a interpreter consultant has been in the industry for ages, but it became something that people started talking about, is that when clients come to their interpreters, they didn't know what technology they could use before, and now there are so many RSI choices, so interpreters get often asked what technology would fit for their particular event, and there is no solution that would fit everybody. So it's good that there is a variety. It gave clients a number of choice, and it gives choice also to interpreters. So what I'd like to ask the panelists here is, your perception on the format of events. We had offline events, we had webinars and online events, and this concept of hybrid has recently came up. And, my personal expectation that hybrid's going to stay. It allowed the audiences to get more attendees. than before. So offline conferences with 300, when it switched to online, increased their audience two times, threefold, and quadrupled it and beyond. So what's your take on it in terms of assume after all the vaccinations, assume after business returns to normal or the new normal, as they call it, will everything go back to kind of offline as it was? Or do you believe that hybrid will become the standard? There will be always an offline element, but there will be always an online element, both for interpreters, both for the clients. What are your take? And maybe let's speculate on the percentage if you want to give the number. I mean, Natalia, could you share your expectations as an interpreter?
Well, first of all, as part of the survey that we did, we also interviewed big customers of interpretation services like European Parliament, European Commission, World Bank, other the UN and other organizations. And one of the questions that we were asking was exactly this one. So what is your outlook for the future? So will RSI stay or everyone, or when the lockdowns are lifted, everyone will go back to booths and to on-site? And everyone were saying that they expect hybrid to come in. And first of all, RSI is not going to go anywhere. Yes, on site will be returning, but at a smaller scale than before the pandemic, because there are small meetings that can be better covered online due to obvious advantages like the no need to travel, no need to fly interpreters or delegates, etc. So these meetings will stay online. Also, as Arsen already mentioned, so this arrival of RSI democratized, I think, interpretation very much. And now we have actually more work because we have more clients who can afford interpretation. And those clients who all did use interpretation services before, they can use them more. So they can have 10 meetings instead of one. And also, and as for hybrids, yes, I think, and all the clients that I was talking to, they agree that hybrid is the future, because, and we see it now, we see it coming, though it's not as simple as it may seem, because it requires really technical expertise, how to set everything up, how to connect interpreters remotely or on-site, how to connect both audience on-site and remote participants. But now, you know, we opened the doors for a remote audience, like you said, and it really increased the number of people who can take part in the meeting. And also, since lockdowns are not yet lifted in all the locations, not everyone can come to the meetings physically. So we so this format, I think, is something that we will see growing in future.
Thank you. And Alex, from your point of view, the hybrid events, could you share some of the challenges that RSI technology has with hybrid event, and where do you see it going, or how do you see it evolving with businesses returning to some sort of new normal or going back to fully offline?
Well, first of all, let's ask ourselves like a question. Why do people even have those meetings and conferences? And I believe, long story short, conferences are held to communicate and to learn something new, right? So it turned out that learning something online isn't less effective than actually traveling somewhere to hear a speech, right, of a speaker. And like, so the only reason is actually to have those meetings is to do business networking and, you know, have a pint of Guinness with a business partner from, you know, a different country. That's why people even have those meetings. And yeah, that's why we will need hybrid. So people will come there to sign a deal, to negotiate the terms. But if it's only about, you know, learning something new or education, yeah, and even, you know, brief, quick networking can be done online. But have you seen VR chat? I believe that's the future. So now we can even like simulate the actual conference. So take the VR glasses, take the all the solutions that we have now, like Hopin, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we will be actually walking among those, you know, conference halls sooner or later.
Yeah, well, talking about the new technologies that come in and play, you know, the virtual backgrounds was maybe the first and very obvious trend. Now we see provider like that put in virtual presentations. So, you know, it's a combination of virtual drop and slides where you are presenting, but it's a combination of 2D virtual reality. And now we're talking about 3D coming in place where you know, with people having 3D glasses, maybe the 3D element is going to take a couple of years before it becomes something that people would just, because unless a person has those glasses, they wouldn't necessarily be using it. But, you know, let's slightly change the gears and talk about recorded versus live events, because one of the trends that we noticed at Translead is that the clients who've been ordering RSI services or live interpretation now are actually ordering voiceovers and subtitles because they've actually pre-recorded events. And we see that trend is actually shifting more towards recorded. And that's purely because of the quality and streaming. Sometimes, you know, a great speaker could just disconnect and thousand people could be sitting waiting until they come back. So things like that, the connectivity, the internet, they're still an issue in 21st century. But do you see that pre-recorded events will kind of take a significant part of the market? And maybe, you know, we start with Arsene for this question.
Thank you. Well, I would like to first go back a little bit to what Alex just said about online learning being as efficient as offline learning is. I don't know. I'm sure if I'm talking to a number of university professors who I'm privileged to be friends with, they will heartily and wholly disagree with you. Online learning is not the same and it's not as efficient and it never will be. And believe me, I tried it as well. So if we are talking like, why do people have conferences? Why they come to meetings? Why they travel? It is new experiences. It is meeting new people physically. It is being in the same room with a lot of people. And I mean, if we draw a parallel with, say, live music events, I'm sure if you talk to musicians, the most thing they miss these days is live concerts. And no online concert, no matter whether you are Metallica or, I don't know, some underground unknown band trying to do a simple Zoom, a simple concert on Zoom, it's not the same as when you have people in the room because there's palpable energy. So that's one point. So I believe there will be a lot of hybrid events. I believe there will be a lot of physical events. I believe there will be some online events, but hybrid is here to stay definitely because, and the only thing it will be limited with is pretty much the speed of the internet. I mean, once 5G is all over the place and we are all happily wearing our tinfoil hats, then everything is going to be, you know, peachy, and everyone's going to do hybrid events with VR, 3D, whatnot. So that's my expectation. Now, going back to what the question was?
Well, the question was, seeing the new trend with event organizers doing more and more pre-recorded slots or doing, again, a hybrid model with pre-recorded, where they have a pre-recorded presentation, but the speaker is actually joining for Q&A live, which kind of appears to be, you know, that it's been live. So we see that trend, and I wanted to have your takes on it. Do you see that pre-recorded events will take a significant share of the events, or it's just a temporary trend that we see these days?
Well, I can only speculate, but I mean, to me, doing a pre-recorded event is like lip syncing on a live show. It's a big no-no in my book. So I wouldn't do that. The only reason why you would want to use somebody's pre-recorded speech is if you desperately want this particular speaker to be on your event, but they have, but they are otherwise engaged. Other than that, I think every speaker should have the decency to address the audience live, be it online or offline.
And Natalia, you shared before in another conversation that we had outside of this webinar that you've been asked to actually do live interpreting of the pre-recorded video. Can you share some of that experience, and why would somebody ask live interpreting of a pre-recorded video instead of doing a voiceover?
Yes, but at first I also wanted to comment on what Alex and Arsene just said about online education and online learning, and I can understand both sides, because I think there are several types of events. First, large industrial conferences where people come for the first reason why people come there is communication and the so-called coffee table diplomacy, you know, when conversations, you know, on the sidelines are much more important than actually the information that you get when you're sitting, you know, and listening to the reports and presentations. And I think that these events will come back. They will come back on site. But there are other events like preparatory meetings, small corporate events, you know, like some webinars, get-togethers. And I think they will stay online, or either they will become hybrid. And as for the efficiency of online learning, if we move away slightly from interpretation industry, I can just confirm what Arsene said, because I have a daughter who is the first grade pupil now. And, you know, during the lockdown, she had to study online. And how hard it was. Yeah, so, yeah. So there are certain issues to it. Now, coming back to your question, Alex, about prayer records, and I also, yes, noticed this trend that there are more prayer records now than we saw before. And the reasons why they do this, I think mostly, yeah, for the quality, and maybe it's more convenient for them, you know, instead of gathering all the speakers in one place at one time, they just switch on the record and that's it. And yes, I was asked to interpret live such pre-records instead of voice over, which I strongly recommended to the client. But the client said that no, they prefer live interpretation. And I can only guess about the reasons, but I strongly believe that this is the price. Because as all interpreters know, the price for pre-records, for voice over of pre-records is much higher, because it takes much more time. The thing is that if they send you the pre-record and it is very dense text at a very high speed, and the only thing you can do, you know, just to ensure the quality, because these records then are put somewhere on internet, either on their websites, on YouTube, for everyone to see. And so you have to do it right, and you have to make a transcript like you are doing, you would do if it was a voiceover. So I did the transcript, and then I nearly translated it in the written form. I used the machine engine for that, and that's another maybe topic for our discussion. But then I edited it, and maybe not all the parts, but the most technically difficult ones, because I just knew that I wouldn't have time, you know, to interpret it live at a very high quality like they demanded it. So I actually had to do much more work for less money.
But at the same time, that ensured higher quality at the end of the day for the client, isn't it?
I had to do that just for myself. You know, I couldn't give them the product which I know would be of worse quality that is acceptable for such prerequisites that will be then put in the internet for everyone to see. And, you know, it's the reputation. So I couldn't compromise on that.
Thank you. Well, Alex, you have a hand raised. Would you like to add something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that if they send you the dense pre-recorded text, just do it voice to text and just speak it out loud as if it is a simultaneous interpretation. No, I'm kidding. I guess the main reason for that is just people trying to save money and time, what is also important. And I just wanted to say that even when the you know on-site participation will be back, RSI is here to stay anyway, because BYOD, bring your own device, which nobody actually noticed before, that is now a trend. You don't have to, because now we want to wipe everything with the sanitizer, right? And nobody wants to touch anything but their laptop and their smartphone.
So. Well, one of the things that we're probably going to see is that the actual interpreting equipment for the attendees will become obsolete. It's just a matter of time. And the concept of bring your own device will take over. It's more hygienic. People have their phone with them. So the concept of, you know, having these infrared receivers in a conference and having 100 pairs of headphones, the bulky ones that people have to put in, it's going to become obsolete. That's the expectation.
Actually, Sennheiser already started experimenting with this a couple of years ago. I think that they have this Sennheiser Mobile Connect for universities, where you have actually like a Wi-Fi repeater and students connect to this Wi-Fi repeater, and there is remote interpretation going on.
The infrared technology like probably will see the end of its life in an interpreted environment in the next couple of years.
It's like Lingvally used to did. You remember a company called Lingvally, the RSI provider? So they used to actually bring a physical device to the stage. And you know, they couldn't survive this pandemic, but I believe that on sites this will be the new model, like instead of the infrared one. Yeah, sorry.
I would like to remind to our listeners and attendees that we will be taking questions for the last half an hour. And so in about 20 minutes, we will be starting to read the questions from the audience. So if you would like to use the chat or the Q&A section in Zoom and just write your questions, so in about 20 minutes, we will be reading them out loud and answering them by our panel. Now, I would like to jump to the next question or topic for us to discuss. And Natalia, you briefly touched, it's the transcription of the videos. We started seeing it also translate that sometimes interpretation is not a preferred option. And, clients would rather just have foreign subtitles. So, you know, getting subtitles in the original language is something that's been there for a while, but getting them to a stage where it's using speech-to-text and AI technology has become quite good. Now it's taken to the next level where a client says, I don't want to have an interpreter, but can you organize the multilingual subtitles for my audience so they can listen to the English or whatever original source and see subtitles in their own language? And we see that those technologies kind of becoming better and better. So from interpreter's point of view, do you see transcribing and RSI tools adding transcription for the interpreters as a benefit or more as a distraction during the work?
Yeah, this auto-captioning feature, I think, is very popular now. It's the trend, and all technical companies are either working on developing something like this and adding to their platforms or already did that. Personally, I haven't yet seen a live event with auto captioning, which would be interpreted. So I didn't have such experience yet. But, you know, judging from my experience with machine translation, machine engines like Google Translate or DeepL, right? I was I tried to translate my text using them to prepare for my assignments, and no, the quality was not up to the standard in any way. So I believe that the same engines would be used for translating the subtitles, if I understand the technology correct. And so I'm not sure about the quality yet, you know, what would be the quality of those translated subtitles. But I also know that there is another tool developed by several RSI providers. It is called AI Assist. I think it's the name by Kudo, and there are other names for this, but the meaning is that crucial information like figures, names, main terms can be you know, provided to interpreters in the form of these subtitles. So it will help the interpreters to do their job better. So I think it would be really in demand, and it could be very valuable, or maybe not the whole text, right, as in auto subtitling, but just the most essential information.
And Arsen, from your point of view, do you see more increase for transcribing, subtitling voiceovers at the moment in your company? Is it something that you expect to grow? You know, could you share any thoughts on that?
Well, subtitling as a form of video translation, yes, definitely. We see an increase in that, but that's basically because we are a company that is global and is working in a market that is largely non-English speaking. At least most of our, or a large part of our clients are not English speaking, so they want everything translated. So, and it's often easier when we have some videos produced by our global office. It's always easier to do a subtitle than to do a voiceover. So that's something we can do in-house. We do the translation, and then we have a visual services department that will add the subtitles, and that's it. So yeah, there is a demand because there's generally an increase in demand for video content, right? So, and that's been on forever. And so that's why there is an increase for an increased demand for subtitling. But the things that you are mentioning, like speech to text, and then speech to text being auto translated, like Natalia mentioned, neural machine translation is certainly a disruptive technology. If we are taking the Clay Christensen definition of the term of a disruptive technology, that's something that goes from the bottom of the market, and that's it's very low end right now, but it's getting better and better and better. It all depends, of course, on the language pair. I mean, if we are talking like English Spanish or English French or German English, then the quality is a lot better. If we are talking English Russian, then from Russian to English, the quality of neural machine translation is often very, very good. English to Russian, not so much. And that's because of the natural difference in the languages. That's because this language pair, although it is fairly well developed, it's, of course, a lot less developed than, say, English French or English Spanish. So these are all the factors that you need to take into account. But once again, if we're talking, you know, your poor man's solution, it's infinitely better than nothing. If you don't have the budget for a live translator to do a proper interpretation of the meeting, and you can only have subtitles, and then those subtitles are auto-translated, you understand at least something. You understand more than zero, and that's, once again, if we are talking about Clay Christensen, that's the salt of any disruptive technology. That's where it starts. I mean, he used to give the example of the Walkman, right? If you remember the first Walkman, it was a very, very unhandy and device with awful quality. It was bulky. It only had like three buttons to operate. The headphones were, you know, the quality of the headphones was god-awful. But then again, it gradually developed into something better and better and better. And now we can listen to music in FLAC quality on our phones. So you start somewhere, but then I believe it will develop. This is like the future of translation as such is post-editing. Mm. I mean, if we are talking commercial translation, of course, not literary texts. But so that's a technology that will develop and will get better and better.
Yeah, well, speech-to-text technology is kind of falling behind the machine translation, and machine translation has been developed to a very high, I would say, high level of standard. And we probably need to take into factor the quality of the audio. If it's a narration by one person, what we actually have seen that the machine translation, speech-to-text, and auto-translate of actual videos and audios is at the moment working very well in the news setting, where there is a dictator or, you know, a news reporter who is speaking to the microphone. Their audio is very crystal clear. And the results of kind of speech-to-text and machine translation and text-to-speech narration is actually fantastic. So there is already a couple of companies who are doing it, and they have signed all the big news media contracts, and they're doing quite well. That technology has been tested on the live conference environment and proved, and business meetings, and proved not to be so effective yet. And it's probably to go back on the client side, because the quality of microphones in the business set environment is so poor, and it makes interpreters' job so hard. Whereas many people talking at the same time, it's noisy, there is echo, Zoom is not using a good microphone. So before that maybe happens in the event industry on a large scale, it's probably be a couple of years, and we really need to see a good quality of microphones. So I guess interpreters will not be out of job in the next jobs. What I wanted also to bring another topic to take it to the next level. We see now Samsung presented it on the last business event. It's the actual virtual humans. And there are already some talks about actually having a virtual interpreter. Is it something that you anticipate is going to happen in 2022? Or do you still believe it's going to be more than that?
Like an avatar?
Virtual? Yeah, it is exactly. It's an avatar, but in a concept of an interpreter.
That's cool.
I haven't seen
what
that.
For? I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, why? there is already virtual assistants that Google presented their virtual assistant. Samsung did it, but then taking it to the next level of a virtual assistant in the form of an interpreter. But that's again linked with the quality of speech to text and text to speech technologies, mm-hmm. AIs and MTs.
Look, about speech to text, just a couple of words about speech to text, if you don't mind, right? So look, it's all about investment. So people are now paying money to people to record, you know, bits of text in different voices, in different manners. And people ask interpreters to come to studios and pre-record. So it's basically teaching the recurring neural, you know, networks and building data sets. It's just a question of time. A bit more than a couple of years, but...
Yeah, and I would also like to agree with you, Alex, about the quality. So it all depends on the quality of the audio you're feeding to speech-to-text, because I also have quite an extensive experience in using speech-to-text programs due to my profession. So mainly I was using Sonic's Eye, probably you know it. It's quite a costly software. And I noticed this, that if the quality is good, but my pre-recordings are usually really good. I mean, I'm speaking about pre-recordings, not about speakers, you know, attending regular conferences with bad mics, etc. So pre-recordings can be, the quality can be very good. And then the quality of speech to text is also good, but yet not perfect. I mean, I have to spend significant amount of time editing it, you know, at least the names and some abbreviations have to be corrected. And if the quality is a little bit worse, I mean, it still sounds good to my ear, but maybe there are certain amount of interferences, something like this. If it's a little bit worse, then the quality just drops radically of speech-to-text software. So that's what I noticed.
Well, we have about 5 minutes left before we start taking questions from the audience. And I would like to spend them discussing another topic. We've seen streamers already coming in. You know, so streaming is considered an event, but it could be a single person using their Instagram or webinar software and streaming to a large audience. And kind of, you know, we've seen a couple of projects requiring RSI for that. We've actually served some of those events for Translate. But I wanted to pick up your brains. Do you see interpreting coming more to streaming? And one of the first companies who actually did it on a large scale was Taobao. It's a, you know, Chinese marketplace. They did a collaboration together with farmers. So the farmers were actually streaming what they're producing, what they're growing, some of the shoppers doing. And they were actually adding live interpreting to those streams. And it actually created a lot of positive results for the farmers, for the small business owners. So do you see interpreting coming to streaming? I mean, streaming is a trend and many businesses go on it, not just celebrities anymore. So do you see interpreting coming into to streaming on a more main scale level that we don't see yet? And maybe, Alex, you want to start on that?
Sure, absolutely. Yes, the answer is yes. The thing is that due to how RSI platforms are built, streaming is like a perfect format for all RSI providers because it's like really cheap comparing to classic way when people listen to the, you know, interpretation and the smartphones or on their laptops, right? So it's really cheap. It's just like one connection from an interpreter to the virtual listener that's been embedded to the live stream. And now you can have your content in YouTube in 7 or 8 languages. And that's something amazing. That's something nobody actually did before. And, you know, I think that the main driver here is that people finally understood why interpretation is important and how it helps to actually, you know, grow people engagement, grow audience engagement, and kind of build the community to make people feel comfortable to make them actually get the message and not just sit there with the infrared receiver and like pretend they know and they understand. So yeah, it's all about being content driven.
And Natalia, to pass the word to you, there is a term in translation which is called transcreation. In interpreting, I don't know, there is an alternative like interpreter creation or whatever you want to call it. But the idea of streaming, where it's not as a direct interpreter, but more of a commentary in another language. So we see this. There's now gamers who are, for example, streaming live to a large audience. And, you know, they're commenting what they're doing. Translating word for word will not be engaging and fun for the audience. So it's a kind of new emerging trend that just came out, but we believe it's going to be massive in the next couple of years, is where interpreter is not just interpreting what the original streamer is doing, but actually commenting it and adding their own bit of flavor. Have you come across any projects like that where interpreter had to be creative rather than just interpreting live what was said? And maybe we come up with a new term for that and make a new word.
No, I don't think there is a special term, but I know that, there are different types of interpretation. And there is one type related to interpreting, you know, maybe coaches, some marketing events, like you probably know Tony Robbins shows. And Tony Robbins has his Russian voices, the interpreters we know well. And yes, and you probably heard the records of how they do it. I mean, it should be very emotional and it should be, you know, this important thing is not to render the content precisely, but the most important thing is to create the same emotions and drive, you know. And I think that's the same. And probably they can add something, some words that Tony Robbins didn't say, but that create the same impact. You know, here it's all about emotions and impact and not about the precision, accuracy of interpretation. So I think you're speaking about the same kind of events. I haven't yet interpreted anything like this. I think you have to be, you know, you have to have the special disposition to do that. I mean, to be very, you know, energetic, to be able to shout and dance and, yeah, and to do this. So probably I'm more suited for, you know, calmer events like corporate things or, you know, international institutions, etc. But yes, that's one type for interpretation that exists.
And I see we're gonna probably see more of that, you know, with the conferences that are more entertainment, more engagement. The interpreters will have to adapt or be at the same level with the speaker. And sometimes it could be a great conference and interpreter could just ruin it all, you know. So the event organizers have to take that into consideration, that interpreters, you know, have to be searched for taking that element as well, that it's not just quality of language, but it's also emotion, energy, and the personality. So Arsene, do you want to add, before we start taking questions, do you want to add any comments on this before we jump to the audience?
No, not really. Well, I mean, if you're talking about streaming, then I'm not sure interpreters are the perfect fit for this kind of job, because what you're actually talking about is pretty much like a sports commentary, a play-by-play announcement, right? And that's something where you need to know more about the sport itself. So if we're talking gaming, like somebody doing a live stream of Diablo or Warcraft or whatnot, then you need to be into this subject. You need to know the game. You need to be a player yourself, the gamer yourself. So I'm not sure interpreters are the perfect people for it. Some of them definitely are, and we know a lot of interpreters who are, you know, autistic enough and who have the gravitas and the stage presence, and they can get on the mic and really do that. And I think we know a lot of those by name and personally, right? But as a general trend, yes, this needs to be translated or somehow interpreted in a different language, but not necessarily by a professional interpreter, but probably by somebody who knows, who has the knack of public speaking and knows the subject.
Yeah, so it's more of a foreign language commentary or interpreted commentary, whatever term you want to assign to it. Alex, were you going to add?
Yeah, Arsene just made a very good point. If you want to provide interpretation for a Dota stream, you just find a Dota player who is an interpreter rather than trying to, you know, make Natalia learn all the terms in 2 weeks, right? It's not going to happen.
And no, it's not going to be fun for the audience,
look
probably.
For interpreters, so, which are gamers, you're right, and there are such interpreters, or interpreters who are in certain types of sports, athletes, so there are interpreters like this, so who
Excellent. Well, we have a couple of questions from the audience, and we promised that we will allocate the last 30 minutes to the questions. If we run out of questions from the audience, we'll continue our chat. But let's just take a couple of them. Julie from Florida in the US is asking about favorite headphones. So maybe this is a question to Alex Gusev and Natalia in terms of equipment. What would be, you know, a favorite headphones brand and models that would be recommended for interpreters and maybe clients as well joining?
Natalia, should you go first?
Yeah, I can. Well, first of all, I recommend to use well-known brands, like, for example, Sennheiser or Logitech or Jabra, right, Alexei? And there is a very good list compiled by AIC. If I find the link now, I will type it in the chat. So the headphones and headsets approved by AIC specifically for remote interpretation. So very convenient. And as for myself, I'm also using a Sennheiser HD599. I will type it later in the chat. But it's headphones, not headsets. So I have a standalone mic. Now you can see it. It's Blue Yeti in my case.
It blurs your mic, like no ads, right? Sorry.
Well, sorry, yes, I had to name certain brands, right? And Well, I think that it provides good quality, but maybe there are cheaper ones, and maybe Alex can remember some cheaper brands, because I think it's one of the premium ones, so it costs about, I think, about 10,000 rubles or 150 USD, something like this.
AKG has quite a good, you know, series, like a good product line, much cheaper than Blue Yeti. The only suggestion that I would give is to stick to USB devices. So it's a USB headset, it's a USB headphones and USB microphone. Just don't go analog, don't go mini jacks and jacks. Unless you're like an audio engineer and you have a mixing console and ready to play with gains and all other settings. And, you know, I personally noticed that there are like two kinds of interpreters. Ones that I prefer more like an opened headset style, like in a call center, and others prefer really like closed ones, like big ones, like gaming stuff. Like I personally, I wear glasses and I can't take the big ones because it starts, you know, being really uncomfortable after a while. Yeah, just my personal favorite is Sennheiser also. So I'm with the German quality.
Yeah, and just for the audience, we're not affiliated with any particular brand. So the panelists are just sharing their own personal views. Now, I would like to take a question for Arsen. The question is from Gabriela. Is Arsen, were there any changes to the types of translations, turnaround time, or rate expectations? That probably goes back on your earlier comment when you were introducing yourself. So, you know, after the pandemic, during the pandemic,
The types of translation did not really change because BCG is doing strategy consulting, and that's our business. So during the pandemic, or before the pandemic, or after the pandemic, it's the same. We did see naturally an increase of COVID because a lot of our clients wanted COVID-specific solutions for their businesses. We did some advisory on how to go. You know, on how to get remote and stay efficient and things like that. So topic-wise, no. Rates-wise, we did not do any heavy renegotiating of rates with our translators or interpreters. The only thing we did renegotiate, as I mentioned, was the minimum number of hours that they charge us, and we went from 4 to 2 hours in some of the cases. And what was the third part of the question?
Well, in terms of changes to rates, turnaround times.
Oh, turnaround times. With our company, turnaround times are always yesterday, so it's there's no change there. It's not the day before yesterday, so it's still yesterday.
And what about the cancellation policy? Like now, everything's like really urgent, so.
We usually do not discuss, you know, it's difficult to talk about cancellation policy when you have a meeting like coming up in 2 hours.
Exactly. So that's an issue now. Yeah.
So it's less of a cancellation policy, but like who's available right now, whom can we get on board like within the next 2 hours or 4 hours?
Please help us. Right?
Yeah. That's just the nature of the business as such. It's not pandemic related.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, we'll take. There was a question on the caption and subtitles request in terms of pre-record. Again, this is Gabriela sharing that sometimes interpreters are asked to do RSI and they are not actually used to it as much, and you know, so subtitles captions are not preferred. So it's not really a question; it's more of a comment. But to ask a question from this, do you see now that interpreters are struggling with RSI? And, you know, Natalia, let's ask you first. Does RSI take a lot of time to learn? And then, Alex, maybe you could add on that as well from, you know, learning RSI for a classical interpreter, and how long does it take and what challenges does it pose?
Sure.
Well, of course, there is a learning curve. I mean, when you face something unfamiliar, strange, it's only natural that you're scared, you know, don't know where to start, you know, you're stressed out. And that's how we felt, the majority of interpreters, I think, in the beginning of 2020, when we all had to go online for evident reasons. I was in a slightly different situation, as I mentioned, because I started doing RSI a little bit earlier. So I had all the necessary equipment, some knowledge. So I wasn't so afraid, but yet, at that point, I think the majority of interpreters, me included, believed that RSI is much, much harder than on-site interpreting because of this additional stress, because you are responsible for your own equipment. If anything goes wrong, you have to fix it. You have to, you know, be a technician yourself in a certain way. And of course, it added to the stress also of this unknown technology you have to adapt, and also to the fact that you don't see your partner anymore. You have to figure out how to do handover and all of this and everything together at the same time. Of course, it was really hard. But according to the results you shared in the beginning of this study carried out by EZIT, so 85%, like I said, of interpreters believe that RSI is more difficult than on-site.
Well, 83, 85.
Yeah.
Sorry? 83. Yeah, but what I personally noticed is that by the end of 2020, when we all adjusted to this new way of working, and you know, we adjusted to handling all this equipment, so everything, we are not so stressed out as before, you know. It's now much easier for all of us, and we found the value in it. We found new advantages of working online. Like, for example, you really don't need to go anywhere. You do not spend time traveling, getting to the other end of Moscow, you know. And you have more time with your family this way. For example, I can multitask, meaning that I can work during my shift, and then when I hand over to my colleague, I can do something with my kid, you know, cook some lunch, something like this. And I'm doing this regularly.
While interpreting?
Not, of course not. when it's not my shift, if it's simultaneous. Yeah, so it provides a lot of opportunities like this. So and also sometimes we can do several jobs per day. I personally do not really like it so much because I need to prepare to all of them, you know, and if they are all very different, it's hard, you know, to switch from one topic to another one very fast. But if it's, you know, a permanent client you're working for a long time, you're familiar with the topic, you don't need to prepare so much, then it's an advantage. You can really do more. You can earn more this way. And at the same time, you are not going anywhere and you're spending time with your family. So for me, I can say that I really like this way of working. Though, of course, I would, since I'm, you know, why conference interpreters are interpreters and not translators, because they like to communicate. They like to visit interesting places. They like to meet colleagues and other people. And that's what we are missing, of course, now.
Yeah, travel was a bonus that interpreters enjoyed, and that bonus was taken away. But you got time saving, yeah. You got less travel. So
there are upsides and downsides. Right. And also, I believe that there should be a certain mix of that, certain part of RSI and on-site interpreting, that would be ideal, I think.
Well, the good news is that now both clients and interpreters will have a choice whether to invite offline or online interpreters, and the interpreter could choose, I prefer to work from home or I would love to travel and come. So that's good that the future of the event probably will give the choice to both sides of the industry. Alex, from your point of view, And, you know, we could share it from Translead as well angle that, you know, when lockdowns happened and there were no interpreting assignments, we started switching to webinars and education. And actually, you know, training and upskilling interpreters for RSI was a key player. So, you know, at the moment, do you see that both interpreters and clients are well-educated? And how long does it normally take you to get somebody familiar with the setup and get prepared for event? You know, just share a couple of maybe case studies or stories, how long it takes and how easy or how difficult it is to educate both interpreters and clients.
From 5 minutes to infinity, I guess. It's all very different. However, I'm like surprised how quickly interpreters have, you know, adopted the RSI and how quickly everybody got used to it. Because I remember before 2020, everybody was like, no, we're never going to use your remote simultaneous interpretation. You're taking away the romancy of our profession. We're not traveling anywhere. We're sitting in our homes. So no, please no. And, you know, once it's all started, everybody just quickly added those watermarks to their avatars, like I'm a remote interpreter hashtag. Yeah, so now everybody's cool, and you know, people very, very quickly got all the necessary equipment, made reserve internet lines, I mean cable lines, like adding a second provider to your house, getting a nice microphone. So it all happened very quick, and people got used to it very quickly. And with Zoom and, you know, self-organization in groups, it's actually very quickly. So, however, I definitely think RSI is harder, because previously you came to the booth and everything was ready there. You just press a button, go on air, and that's it. And now you have to take care about a lot of things, and it's very distracting. So as an interpreter, you probably shouldn't be focusing on those things, but now you have. I mean, you know, yeah, it's pluses and minuses everywhere.
Interpreters are usually humanitarians, so you know, they would be more not social, to offend anybody. Yeah. They're very technical interpreters, but I would say maybe 0.5% of interpreters wouldn't be considered tech savvy. So what Natalia said earlier on, that they had to become self-technician, audio technician, video technician, internet, network engineers, all of that to make sure that the quality and the equipment is ready.
You actually will be surprised, but it's like the opposite, because interpreters are those who used to deal with professional sound systems before, during on-site assignments. And we have a lot of